Thank you to all our participants who've dialed in and joined us today. I hope everyone's had a really good season so far. I know it's been a very unusual year, and obviously we've been keeping up to date with the progression of the coronavirus situation this year. But I think as we come towards the end of the Mediterranean season, I think we will be running a series of webinars on a range of different topics, just to help a lot of crew who are in transition between the Med season and, say, the Caribbean season. But also for those of you who are looking to spend some downtime during the winter to do some training and other professional development, we'll be doing a couple of webinars in the next few weeks covering all sorts of topics from finance, so crew finance and investment, training, so all the different types of training that's available at the moment. Courses coming up in the next few months, and some of the issues that crew might be dealing with towards the end of the season. So recording your sea service, getting certification, and a few other things along those lines that our team at the PYA can help crew with. So that will all be published on our social media and website in the next few days. So definitely keep an eye on that. So just to make a start on our schedule for today. So so my name is Stacey Suter, and I'm the communications manager at the PYA. The first panelist that I'll be handing over to is Andy Crawford, who's our PYA CEO. So Andy's got a lot of experience in the maritime sector. And so we'll hand over to you first, Andy. But before I hand over to you, I'll just run quickly. So after Andy, we have Rod Hatch, who is one of our PYA counselors, and he's also a current captain. And after Rod, we've got Richard Bridge, who's a captain and owner and director of Bridge Yachting. Richard, I don't know if you're a current captain, but I know that you're definitely an ex-captain, so I'm sure you can tell us all about your experience when we get on to you. And then lastly, we've got Martin Maney, who's head of leadership and coaching from Luxury Hospitality Group. So those are all our panelists for today. And as you know, we'll be discussing the topics of conflict resolution and leadership in yachting and on board. And I think right now that we're moving towards the end of a season where a lot of people have obviously had to deal with a whole lot of new challenges this year. I think this topic might be, quite key to some of you who are on board. So hopefully you find it really useful. Feel free to add any questions in our chat. And at the end of the webinar, we'll be running through those questions. So without further delay, I'll hand over to you, Andy. I think you'll just have to unmute your mic. And I think maybe, Andy, what might be good is if you can just start by providing a bit of an introduction on your experience in the maritime sector before you sort of go into some of the advice that you've got for conflict resolution and leadership.
Okay, thanks, Stacey. Yeah, hi, everybody. My background's not in the yachting industry, but in the wider deep sea. And then I was actually running a marine company in the UK, which had over 180 people working for it, variety of vessels. And I've been a master as well, up to cable ship size. So I've dealt with quite large crews, as well as people working in a port environment, which obviously changes some of the metrics a bit. And it's I've also always had an interest in training. In fact, I've been involved with IAMI as their business manager for some years, and was around doing that when the introduction of the thing called HELM came in, which those of you who've got STCW certificates know what that is, but others may be an acronym which is not known. It stands for Human Elements, Leadership and Management. And it was brought in 2010 as part of the Manila Convention, which is a change to the certification structure. So what I'm going to do just in the quick 10 minutes I've got, it really a scene setter, because we've got people like Richard and Rod who are practicing masters in yachting. And so they can put some of the sort of the hard lessons into much, much closer context. But obviously things like human elements and leadership training applies right across the whole maritime sector. So this level of training is given in any under any flag state around the world, and obviously was brought in for yachting as well. So if you're going for your Off the Watch, then you'll be doing the helm ops course as part of your certification to get that overall certificate. So I'm going to just use this opportunity just to set some sort of cornerstones of what can quite often be the root cause of crew disputes or problems on board ships. And the helm, to some extent, was designed to try and put a structure all around that and to make it easier for people to understand what's going on without having to try and deal with these things from a sort of basis of their own experience. So an element of training has crept in. In my day, and I think probably in Richard and Rod's day, this didn't exist. So you learned from observation. You hopefully had some good people around. You saw the way some of your senior officers dealt with situations, and you learned from it. This is an attempt to try and structure things. It's a very, very movable area of STCW, and I suspect you might see some changes coming out in the next round of the International Convention. But so what do we mean by helm? I mean, if I just take the human element subject, I'm just going to canter over something that takes 2 days to teach. Ideas. So the living environment in which you end up in on board a ship, obviously depending on the size of the ship, the vessel, is going to be a big factor. So your space, your environment is crucial. And I would suggest probably on smaller vessels with larger crews, then you've got greater problems because you've got the proximity of living with people in tight accommodation, working long hours together, etc. And I'm sure the others will go into that a bit more. But there are things that you need to consider. We often now sail with different people from different countries, so ethnic factors and influences come into it. And it's just being aware of that. That's a thing to really think about if you're, and maybe take an interest in someone whose ethnicity is different to yours. See, sex multi crews are pretty common these days. And that's always going to be there. And if one's thinking about it, alert to it, unprofessional about this, an awful lot, and PY have done an awful lot about sexual harassment and shining a light in that, and other people as well. I mean, there's a new helpline being put up by iSWAM, which is looking into key area, particularly in yachting. It does have an effect on large ships.
Oh, sorry, you're breaking up a little bit, Andy. I don't know if you can just repeat the last couple of sentences. I can see, I think you're back now.
Okay. I'll just turn something off. I'll just talk to you about ethnic factors and then moving on to culture. Can you hear me okay now, Stacey?
Yes.
Yeah. So what do we mean by culture? Language, jargon, cuisine, social habits, the whole raft of things that make up people's backgrounds, and that sometimes can be a massive plus, but it all can sometimes can create problems, particularly if you're eating together and the cuisine is different to what you're used to or people's eating habits. It's a particularly a key area. As I say, religion and social factors to do with people's ethnic background can also be a big factor. And you can actually make big mistakes there quite easily without even knowing it. So just asking a few questions and finding out a bit about people tends to sort of, sensitize that a little bit. Communications, a massive area of communications, being able to speak in a calm and clear way to get information across, perhaps to people who, if it's English, it's not their first language. So using simple short sentences and terminology is quite important. And to get feedback to make sure that your instructions are being received, so Q&A. what all these factors do is they give the potential for conflict. They start a process. So trying to get some of these sort of tools right at the outset, when you first get a crew together, I think is quite important. So you need to transmit and receive in communications. The other thing that you'll hear a lot about is teamwork. And this wonderful expression, there's no I in team. That's a big, big issue, particularly on smaller vessels, where ultimately you're all in the same hole in the water and you're all relying on each other's skills for the safety of the vessel and indeed the passengers' safety as well. So getting a team working together is absolutely crucial. And we've all seen good examples of that. We've all seen probably bad examples of that. And as a captain, certainly, getting your team together and creating a team and strengthening a team and nurturing a team, as some people call it, is a really worthwhile thing to do. It pays you back in dividends. And believe you me, I've been in a situation where I've had an explosion on a ship killing people. And because my guys were well-trained and worked as a team, we actually dealt with it in a pretty professional way. And it was, you know, it was a great, great experience from that perspective. The other thing is we operate to procedures. Why do we have procedures? Why do we have management systems? Well, the idea is that it takes out the sort of vagaries of it, takes out the question marks. It makes things repeatable. It actually acts as a guide to people if they're new to the vessel to be able to know how to do things effectively. They can see what the organizational structure is. They can see where they might fit into it, what their roles and responsibilities are. It's pretty awful when you start criticizing someone for not doing their job properly and you haven't actually told them what their job is. So that can create a lot of stress and give you problems. The other big area, of course, we talk about all the time is fatigue. Workload is a massive factor, and yachting has got its own particular problems there. So you've got to be really on top of that. You've got to be able to monitor it. Monitoring it in yourself, and as you're more experienced, you probably recognize the signs, but also legally monitoring it for the crew. And when people are tired, I mean, for example, if they've been awake working for 24 hours, they're actually in a worse condition mentally than if they were twice over the alcohol limit for driving on the roads. So that's the mental state people can get into with a lot of fatigue. So don't be surprised if you start getting some issues when the crew are being heavily worked. And we deal with that through management plans and watch routines as far as we can. And of course, we're under legislation under the working time directives as well. I'm cantering on, so I'm going to move to leadership. What is leadership? Well, one definition is it's taking a group of people and achieving a common goal. Well, a common goal could be to keep this vessel working effectively as a highly professional unit and delivering a quality service in yachting. In other sectors of the maritime industry, it could be delivering cargo in a safe way. Pretty common in the maritime sector. I mean, you know, getting from A to B safely is probably first thing on the list. One of the things that as navigators we all do, a thing when we do passage planning where we use four key elements known as appraisal, planning, execution and monitoring. It's actually a very good thing to do. One of the things that's taught in Helm is risk assessment. And if you don't have a plan, then you're not going to be able to execute a plan. You're not going to even know if you've gone off what you intended to do. And it's not just about putting lines on a chart and getting from A to B. When we're talking about planning, we're actually talking about anything you're doing on the vessel, which is, again, the reason why we have risk assessments and we have procedures to make sure that we've thought through and reduced the risks to everybody. And it gives confidence to particularly junior members of crew, they can see that sort of process of operating. It also means you can apply corrective actions. So when things didn't go quite right, you can work out what didn't go right and correct it. And it creates something for the team. And the team can move forward. The other massive area is complacency. Complacency causes 90% of accidents at sea. And I'm talking about across the whole sector. If you look at most accidents that take place on board ships, it's not the ship that's sort of suddenly decided something strange, it's the people on it. And it's normally a complacency-driven problem. And it can manifest itself in all sorts of ways. and you've probably experienced it yourself, but it's quite difficult to stand back and look to see whether you're all getting a little bit complacent about things. You know, are you wearing the PPE that you should be wearing? Are we just pop out and let that line go? You know, we won't worry about it too much. And that's when accidents happen, for example. And the thing that was created to help us with that in maritime environment, thing called ISM, safety management system, which was actually designed as a tool for leadership. It was designed for that purpose. And those vessels which operate commercially and come under that code will need to follow its provisions. So it's there to help. It's a tool. Just in sort of summary, I think feedback, listening, and honesty in the way that you organize the vessel is pretty key. A book I would recommend, it's talked about on the Helm courses, you can get it free from the Maritime Coast Guard Agency, is a book called Leading for Safety. And it's a very good book. And it's certainly talked about when you do the Helm Ops course. So please have a look at that if you ever get a chance. Hopefully there might be a copy on board. And no teacher like experience. So don't be too hard on yourself if you're new to the game. You know, every day is a learning day. So just go forward in a proactive way. I think that's sort of just covered the point, Stacey, that I wanted to scene set. And I know these other guys have probably got other things to talk about around some of those subject headings.
Yeah, so I mean, thanks. That's really great, Andy. I think you've definitely helped, I think, set the scene and introduce some of the key themes around, you know, when you talk about conflict resolution, what are the key things you need to be thinking of? Obviously, you've mentioned Helm, which is really, you know, I think it's a great course for those looking to take up leadership positions in the industry. And then, as you said, I think sometimes it's just not being complacent and being a little bit more aware. So thank you very much. We will move on next to Rod Hatch, who I said is one of our PYA counselors and also a current captain. I can see Rod, looks like you're currently on board. Can you give us a little bit, just a bit of introduction about your experience? So before we go into talking about conflict resolution and leadership.
Fine, thank you, Stacey. 1969, I made an abrupt career change from a lecturer in economics at a college of technology and became a deckhand on a 110-foot motor yacht. Since then, I've been in commercial vessels, back to yachting again. I'm still operating as a relief captain, which is what I'm doing at the moment. So now I'm my 51st year of yachting. And sometime in the future, I'm looking to get a real job. But that's a sort of a brief summary of my experience. Andy's given a very thorough across the board introduction into all the factors that we have to consider during today's seminar. We can look at this on a macro level, and we look at it on a micro level. On a macro level, let's think of all the reasons, many enumerated by Andy, why conflicts can arise on board. There are conflicts in every workplace situation. It's just human nature. It's compounded in yachts because of the confined quarters that we live in. You wake up in the morning, you open your cabin door, and you're at work. There's not many other places where you go through that sort of experience. Given that we know the conflicts that can build up through tiredness, through repetitive work, sometimes not knowing what your program is, all the things that come up during the day-to-day life on board a yacht. Preventive medicine is something to be looked at. Before a crew is even put together, one could think of things, what can we do to go outside the package that we offer people in terms of their salary and of their leave, to make them feel that there's something about this yacht that makes them want to be part of it, what Andy calls the team, or we can call the community. We can look at doing things like a lot of communal activities. I think a lot of captains have had experience of having to do this recently during the lockdown. What do you do when your crew cannot get off the boat? They're confined within the perimeters of the deck handrails. People had to come up then with ways of maintaining cohesiveness in the crew and keeping friction to a minimum. And they did it by giving people space where possible. And on the other hand, doing a lot of communal work. People did things like they swapped jobs. They put deckhands down the engine room. Stewardesses went out on deck. Engineers gave a hand in the galley. These are all things which prevent friction coming up in the first place, because people have gotten an interest in working with each other and in being together. That's one aspect of it. Just touching on one specific item which Andy mentioned in terms of sexual harassment, sometimes it can be inadvertent. This comes about because mores change. What is acceptable for one generation may not be acceptable for the next. So it's very important for people at management level to make sure that they themselves are current with what is acceptable at this in this day and age, and then they make sure that their crew are aware of it. So any little remarks that are made which the captain feels may be taken the wrong way by somebody could be quietly dealt with a word in somebody's ear. It prevents something happening in the first place. Another thing that I'm very fond of doing is that replacing, well, you can't replace training. You have to have training, you have to have drills. But what I like to do is to add to the drills, because that drills bring people together, but it doesn't bind them. What can bind people is theatre. So I write scenarios, and I get people sometimes to dress up and act out scenarios in which maybe one crew is a very rich charter client and has a horrendous accident. And I'll spring this on them and stand back and watch the chief officer and his team deal with it. I'll give them the full scenario just before this ghastly accident, with ketchup all over the place and a contorted body line at the foot of a ladder, so that they then have to imagine together and work together, but they have to do it realistically. What would happen if this were real? Who do they contact? How do they go about it? Who do they send to fetch what first aid equipment, and so on? And the other thing that really brings people together is for the captain and the senior officers not to do all the teaching. Get the young ones to do the teaching. Give them small subjects and in small groups, get them into the habit of delivering instruction, holding drills themselves under observation. And I find that these are all useful tools in preventing, helping to prevent friction and conflict in the first place. When conflict does happen, then we'll come on to that later in the session.
Brilliant. Thanks, Rod. And just to let everyone know, we have released some of Rod's written up drills. You can find those on our blog. So specifically a fire drill scenario Rod has written up. So we've released that. And also for health and safety accidents on board, we've also got one of those. So thanks very much, Rod. I think you're right in saying that. I think getting when it comes to getting teamwork done on board, I think it's very easy for the sort of more experienced members who are in leadership positions to just take the lead with these type of drills and exercises. But I think actually getting the younger, inexperienced crew involved is really important to sort of turning that on its head and getting them to sort of, I think it's getting them in others' shoes really, and getting them more involved. So thank you very much. I can just see it's going on Hoppers 5. So I know, Andy, you've got to duck out the webinar at 5:30. So we'll say goodbye to you. Cheers. Right. So our next panelist we have is Richard Bridge. So Richard, I know you've been a captain for many years, and now you're the owner and director of Bridge Yachting. So could you tell us a little bit, Richard, about your experience specifically, and then I guess you could go into some of your tips and techniques about how you've gone about dealing with conflict resolution on board. And your approach to leadership.
Thanks very much, Stacey. Not quite the career that Ron's had there, but I've been 37 years at sea, captain on, I worked my way up from cargo ships and then onto cruise ships, captain on cruise ships for 5 years, and then on yachts for 15 years. Swallowed the anchor and came ashore 2 years ago now, and doing consultancy work. And for me, I mean, the most important thing I think to stress is that the crew are the most important ingredient on any yacht. But at the same time, they take probably 95% of your time as captain in keeping them motivated, keeping them on the side, and all working towards the common goal. For me, a clear set of rules is a very important thing. I've always found that a well-written and frequently updated crew handbook is a very good document to be able to refer back to. The basis for this, I go right back to the Merchant Navy Code of Conduct, and then I've tended to interpret that for the variety of situations that occur on board, hence the frequent update, because you are learning all the time. Very important factor is that different owners have different ideas and priorities. So your crew handbook needs to reflect the ethos of the owner as much as yourself as captain, and rules and regulations, because each owner has their own ideas. A very clear disciplinary conflict procedure contained within the handbook, and make sure that you follow it. So the crew get the handbook on when they sign the contract, and they have to read through and sign it as being understood, so they know what the rules are, and they know what they can and cannot do. I would say also that it's very important that it doesn't just stop at the captain. So most situations I encourage heads of department to deal with, and it's important to empower them to be able to do that. But if they're not satisfied with that, or they want to bring it to the captain, then you need to be accessible and happy and open to dealing with that. And ultimately, if they're not happy with your handling of the situation, then they should have access to the GPA ashore. The captain is not beyond reproach. I think, though, it's very important at the very base level to encourage crew to talk to each other, because very often conflict is a result of a simple misunderstanding or just pure communication. So it's very important that they are encouraged to discuss their problems directly. Another important thing is that the rules apply to all. There should not be any special exemptions for senior or favourite crew, or indeed for yourself. I do know one captain who's shall remain nameless, who on one occasion went ashore with the crew and had a meal out, and they all got a bit drunk and got back late after curfew. And then in the morning he decided to discipline everybody who'd come back with him. So it's very important that the rules are applied evenly. It's important to avoid taking sides or pointing the finger of blame. You need to listen to all sides and make it clear that everyone's opinion or version of events is being considered. I fell victim to that myself one time where the actual situation on board, the alcohol was going missing, and a crew member pointed the finger at another crew member. But after a full investigation, it was discovered that they were actually stealing it themselves. And that sort of thing. You really need to get all sides of the story and fully understand. Don't take things personally. You need to separate your personal feelings from and get to the truth and to the heart of the matter. Talk to the heads of department and question your own opinion. Try and see things from all sides is very important. You should also keep perspective. Do not sort of encourage an escalation of a simple situation. Have the heads of department deal with situations for themselves, as I said, but always, you know, have your door open to mentor them in that. You need to try and get crew to see the big picture, and that whilst their situation may seem very important in the big scale of things, it may not be. And on that, you need to keep an eye out for divisions within the crew. Again, using heavy departments, ensure that they know what's going on within their department and that they're also approachable and will listen to crew. Another situation I had on a great boat, but we a small change of deck crew, and the deck team became rather chauvinistic, which caused a lot of problems, certainly with the interior crew. It's very important to sort of understand that sort of thing and deal with it before it becomes any greater. General techniques for yacht crew on leadership. I think it's very important to empower crew so that they themselves learn a thought process and can make their own decisions. Certainly as captain, being in charge does not mean making every decision. There are often many ways to address different problems, and you need to give crew leeway to work things out their own way, but always be there for advice and only step in when it's absolutely necessary. And on that, I mean, you have to remember what it was like for you at that stage in your career to understand somebody's point of view. I go back to my cruise ships days, when I just got my master's ticket, and certainly I think I felt that I knew it all, but the most difficult thing was that your opinion wasn't being taken on board or listened to, and for me, I think that's important that crew feel that they are being listened to and taken notice of. Small things, look for the good and not for the bad. Don't be vindictive. You have to accept people's differences. As Andy was saying, we work with crews, certainly on larger yachts, of very different backgrounds. And people will always tend to split themselves into different groups, and that's okay. But as long as they have the common goal of the yacht and looking after each other and being there and working for the owner, then that's very important. One of the most interesting trips I remember was also one of the most difficult. We were in Alaska ended up being a 6-week trip with up to 26 guests on board. During the trip, we had two crew medical evacuations. We had a fire, we had an earthquake, we had a tender near sinking. But the atmosphere on board with the crew was fantastic. You know, we had these challenges, but it actually pulled the crew together in a really good way. I think that pushing that common goal is a very, very important part.
Let me just unmute myself. Thank you so much. it's really interesting what you say there. And I think almost touching on what Rod said, I think what's quite interesting is sometimes when crew are busy and they've got, a lot of pressure Obviously, sometimes it can either work in a positive way or a negative way, but particularly obviously during downtime, we saw that during lockdowns where a lot of crew was stuck on vessels, how important it is to ensure that crew are channeling their energy into, you know, positive activities. So yeah, really, really interesting. And thank you so much for sharing so many of those examples from your experience. That was really interesting. So thank you. So I can see Martin, you've joined us. So just to let everyone know, Martin May, he's head of leadership and coaching at Luxury Hospitality. Martin, could you just give us a bit of an introduction about yourself, a bit of your experience and what you're currently doing before sort of leading in? I know you're head of leadership, so leadership is probably going to be a big focus on what you can share with us today.
Sure. My background is predominantly education. I've worked in both the secondary sector and the post-compulsory sector for probably 20 years. But I've also worked outside of the education sector in recruitment, in leisure, in the beauty industry. So I've led across many different types of organisation with different types of internal customers and stakeholders. I've led teams in my early 20s as small as 10 people, and I've had staff teams as big as 500 with student bodies of 10,000. A many varied leadership background. I also had a 3-year stint in the superyacht industry from 1999 to 2002, and I've worked both on interior and on deck. I've got an understanding of how important harmony aboard is, not only to the health and well-being of people and their enjoyment of everyday life, but also for the performance of the team in terms of supporting guest service and excellence. Indeed, in my time on board, I did experience more than one conflict between crew members aboard the yachts that I was working on. Some as low level as personality differences and bickering, and some that have led to physical fights and, you know, physical damage to the yacht itself. Whilst my career hasn't been heavily focused on board boats, I have some experience, and I've got plenty of experience in terms of people falling out with each other in day-to-day life. What I'm currently doing is I head up leadership and coaching for Luxury Hospitality, a company that's owned by Peter Vogel. I don't know whether people are familiar with Peter. He just seems to have a bit of a name in the industry. Every time I mention his name, everyone goes, yes, we know Peter. And I've been with Peter for nearly 2 years now. And we kind of combined my leadership background with my experience on yachts, and now we support many yachts and also maritime land-based organisations with their leadership development, capacity coaching, and team building and team communication. So that's a little bit about my background. In terms of the conflict situation. Yeah. Sorry, Rod, I didn't catch your input. So I apologise if I'm going over stuff that you've already said. And equally, Richard, you know, I had great respect for everything that you were saying there. It resonates with me completely. And I was late. I've got two daughters who are still busy and active. And I was dropping one off at Bali and then one off at a friend's house. And it really brought home to me. I can walk into one family home, and the kids are fighting all the time, and they're squabbling. Even between the parents, there's conflict. And I can walk into another home, and it doesn't happen. And I can walk into one school, and the behaviour and the standards of behaviour and the way people communicate with each other are good. And I can walk into another school 2 minutes down the road with exactly the same catchment and exactly the same type of kids with the same type of parents from the same type of backgrounds. And kids are smoking on the way to school. Girls have got the skirts up around the waist. They've got makeup on. And to me, you know, the crucial part is all about the leader and the leadership team and their expectations, and being very, very clear what their expectations are about how we want things to be around here. And whether that's expressed in formally agreed and written down values or in a code of conduct backed up by a disciplinary policy. But the first part is establishing what is the expected behaviour around here. And then once you are very clear on that expected behaviour, it's then the leader and the leadership team and even the rest of the crew relentlessly reinforcing that on a day-to-day basis. If people see that conflict is not dealt with, conflict continues. And it's really, really important that people are very, very clear that when things happen on this in this environment, then there will be a consequence and it will be dealt with. Now, that doesn't mean to say people are going to get screamed and shouted at, but things will be dealt with. And if people aren't clear on that, then that's when things start to break down and poor communication starts to develop and then unrest and unease develops.
I think what you're saying, you know, it's definitely touching on what, you know, Rod and Richard both said in the fact that I think it's so important that leaders, captains on vessels are aware of all conflicts that are going on, and so getting the other crew involved and then addressing those conflicts and not just turning a blind eye, because I think that can lead to further.
That's a recipe for disaster. You know, the easy thing sometimes to do is when you're in the crew mess and you can hear one person gossiping speaking negatively about another person, and you've still got a busy schedule yourself, the easy thing to do is to let it go and turn a blind eye, cock a deaf ear. But all you're doing is saving up an even bigger problem that's going to come up and bite you on the bum a bit further down the line. I think what is healthy in terms of certainly the teams that I've worked with is, you know, I make sure that people are aware that they are responsible for their own behaviour. I'm not there to manage them. I'm there to guide them and support them, but they are professionals in their own right, and they are self-managing individuals and self-leading individuals. It is their responsibility that if they start to find themselves getting into conflict, that they start to find the solutions and don't always come to somebody else to sort out their problem. It's not a high school. It's not a playground. You're grown-up people getting paid good salaries. This is absolutely essential in terms of the happy, healthy environment on board, that these conflicts, wherever they start to arise, are dealt with and smoothed and resolved very, very early. And when people come complaining, my first thing is always push it back to them and go, what are you going to do to resolve this? Don't look at me. First, back to you. And that doesn't always work, but, you know, initially I would put the onus back on them to go, you know, go, you two go away and come back to me and tell me what you are going to do about how you are going to resolve your conflict. And if you can't resolve it, what are your choices then? And put the ownership back on them.
Really important. And I think, it seems to be a very strong theme in leadership. I think a lot of people think of leadership as, yeah, the ones in leadership positions, making all decisions, doing all the work. But I think actually giving that power back to the crew to solve problems, not leaving it solely on the leaders to deal with, I think it's really important.
Yeah, you've got to be very careful you don't start sitting in the middle, and because, you know, whoever's talking to you, their version of the truth is the truth. Mm-hmm. And you will not convince the other one. So, you know, you can't convince anybody that they need to find their own new way forward. I think the point that Richard made regarding no favourites and treating everybody equally is critical, because again, that starts to, you know, when people perceive that you have a favourite or you're giving special preferences or special treatment to certain other members of the crew, that starts to build resentment, which can lead to direct conflict with the crew. And something that I always find that high-performing organisations and high-performing teams do well is they have difficult conversations well. I would always encourage, even before conflicts arise, that what I want people to do on here is when you're not on the same page with somebody, have the conversation. This is not an opportunity to point a finger and start to blame and accuse and judge people, but it's an opportunity with an open heart and a good heart to try and find out why you are not seeing things the same way as somebody else. Mm-hmm. And I would say that's probably in one of the top three things that great organizations do well, is have difficult conversations early to get people on the same page before bigger problems arise further down the line.
Brilliant. Yep. So I think you're right. You know, I think acting quickly is another key recommendation. You know, not letting things fester, because I think it's clear when big problems blow up, especially on a vessel where everyone's confined, it's usually because smaller problems were not dealt with in their beginning stages, and they've sort of been left to sort of fester and manifest on board.
Yeah. And I guess, a couple of final points really on the sort of preventing is the valuing of individuals and making sure that everybody on board feels valued, not just the ones that it's obvious who are doing a great job. You know, find reasons to catch people in, not catch people out, and find opportunities to give them a good pat on the back and a well done. Sometimes you may not even yet see it in the individual, but if they believe you believe in them, they will start to believe in themselves more. But ensuring that, you know, this valuing is spread equally amongst the crew, not just the ones who are seen as the favourites, the chosen ones, the high flyers, the new kid on the block, you know, teacher's pet, whatever you want to call it. You know, these people will always exist in an organisation or an environment. It's making sure that you have the eyes to make sure everybody feels valued. And again, just in my experience, not just on board, but in teams in general, you know, finding ways to promote bonding activities, team building activities, finding ways for crews to connect with each other are all brilliant and can work massive, massive wonders in cohesion and harmony. My only word of caution with that one is just be careful on the booze, because I've seen great events go well and, you know, the next thing two blokes are fighting who are best mates and share a cabin and have never had a fallout before in their life because they've had a few too many. So, you know, just easy on the alcohol.
Yeah, I mean, very, really great point, because I think a lot of crew bond in the industry, maybe by getting off the vessel, going for a drink together. But I think, you know, as a captain, or if you're in a leadership position, actually getting crew to do more constructive bonding, such as the drills that Rod's written up, obviously are great and possibly better ways to make sure the crew are learning how to work together, obviously on board in the work environment. So yeah, really great suggestion. And what I'll do is I'll share Rod's examples in the group for everyone.
If I can just add a couple of comments to what Martin just said. He's absolutely right about trying to do communal activities, finding the funding for it. Something I've found useful is not just a crew dinner, but a crew outing. Hire a bus for the day, everybody can bring one friend. That makes something which is pretty memorable, because not everybody does it. And it does show that everybody is important and everybody belongs in this group, in this community. And another thing that Martin said, don't forget to say please and thank you. And to, wherever you can, reinforce, don't criticize. And if you're going to criticize, do it very constructively. The first time that I ever allow a chief officer or a second officer to dock the yacht, I always announce on the radio afterwards, okay, we were docked today by so-and-so, super job. That kind of reinforcement, that makes people really feel good about themselves, and that one needs to find a way to do that for everybody in the crew.
Yeah,
definitely. Great. I think great points. I mean, I think what's really interesting, just hearing all these suggestions, is I think a lot of this stuff, some people may say, well, this is obvious. But I think what's interesting is it's really not. And I think a lot of the time, you know, it is. It's simple things in life, you know, simple respect, communication, just helping crew feel valued. These simple steps can go such a long way. And if simple steps are not being followed, that's when, you know, obviously there are conflict issues and other issues on board.
It's not so much that they're necessarily simple, but they come from a place of care as opposed to a place of control. And, you know, I think there is a big mix in the industry. You know, when I walk on board a vessel where I can immediately sense an environment where people feel cared for. And that generally means a happy crew, a high-performing crew, and low levels of conflict. Where the control is more the leader's focus, that's where I see less happy crew, less harmony, and less high performance within the teams on board. And I think, you know, the adage of it's not about being in charge of the people in your care, but it's about caring for the people in your charge, is for me at the core of what makes a great leader great.
Yeah, I think that's such a brilliant point to sort of end off on. And because, you know, yachting is it's a 24/7 environment. You know, you're on board all the time. So you're you know, there's a lot of I would say, I guess, people's personal lives that are involved, you know, in front of crew members. And I think if leaders take a little bit more care in their approach as opposed to control, I think there's just a much better atmosphere on board. Brilliant. I don't know if anyone's got any last points that they want to end off on. I can't see any questions that have come up in the chat, so we don't have any last pieces just to run through. So I don't know, does anyone have any last points? No, we're all good. Brilliant. Well, thank you very much, everyone. I think that was really useful. Just to let everyone know that we did release a blog news article on our website last week with some advice and techniques on conflict resolution on board. And I think we will be following up with more leadership techniques, because I think what we discussed today was, you know, really interesting. I think brought to light some really nice insights. So thank you very much to everyone. And yeah, I hope everyone has a great rest of your Wednesday. And please do keep an eye on our social media and our upcoming events on our website, where we'll be publishing the sign-up links to our upcoming webinar in 2 weeks' time.